Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link on this Monday, September the 18th. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you for joining us.
Coming up on today's program, South Africa's Revenue Services to sue the auditing firm KPMG for retracting a report which President Jacob Zuma had used as his main evidence for sacking former Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan.
Gordhan had always insisted that he never presided on an illegal unit. He had said this unit was authentic, it was performing functions of trying to make sure everybody's paying tax. But because of this KPMG report, then it was alleged the unit was illegal.
Germany's Social Democrats leader Martin Schulz reveals his plan to curb illegal immigration and human trafficking ahead of this weekend's elections.
We need a migration law like the US, Canada, Australia, like the main immigration countries, so people can apply to immigrate.
We will bring you these stories and more from the comments you have left us on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
But first, here's a chance to hear what's happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. A top politician of the far-right Alternative for Germany party has spoken out against immigration and Muslims on Monday, telling reporters that Islam does not belong in Germany. His controversial comments come after a German newspaper released an election poll showing the populist AfD party polling at 11%, meaning the party could enter the German parliament after September 24th federal elections. Hubertus Heil, general secretary of the Social Democrats, which sits at 20% in the polls, said the populist party doesn't stand for anything.
It isn't for something, it is mostly against something. And the Alternative for Deutschland party isn't able to give our country what it needs, which is a secure future.
The United Nations reported on Monday that at least 44 people have died in a cholera outbreak in Nigeria's northeastern Borno state, where at least 2,000 people since mid-August are suspected to have been infected by the contagious disease. The UN has blamed the deadly outbreak on violence caused by the militant Boko Haram group, which has forced more than 2 million people to flee their homes. The UN is asking for nearly 8 million euros to keep the disease from spreading. Also in Nigeria, at least 15 people were killed in three suicide blasts just outside the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. Rescue workers told reporters that at least 40 people were wounded in the blast, adding that at least two of the bombers were women. The militant Boko Haram group, which has been blamed for the blast, has killed some 20,000 people since it started its insurgency in 2009. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. World leaders have gathered in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly on Monday, where host U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to discuss UN reforms with Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Speaking at the event, Trump said the UN could do a much better job.
I applaud the Secretary General for laying out a vision to reform the United Nations so that it better serves the people we all represent. We support your efforts to look across the entire system and to find ways the United Nations can better and be better at development, management, peace, and security.
A French IT company that supplies Kenya's election board has said its technology would not be ready for use by October 17th, the date set by the country's Supreme Court for fresh elections. Kenya's top court nullified President Uhuru Kenyatta's election win last month after opposition leader Raila Odinga claimed the election was rigged. The IT company said in a statement that its electronic systems would have to be reinstalled for the rerun vote. And now in Bundesliga football news, Wolfsburg have replaced head coach Andreas Jonker after winning just one match in their last four league games. Martin Schmidt, who coached Mainz last season, has taken his place. Both assistant coaches and Wolfsburg's match day and analyst have also been relieved of their duties. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. Let's begin this show in South Africa. The South African Revenue Services, SARS, has said it will sue the auditing firm KPMG after it retracted its report that was used by President Jacob Zuma to fire former Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan. SARS Commissioner Tom Mayone told a press conference today that KPMG's decision to annul the report was abhorrent, unprofessional and unethical conduct. KPMG says it is weighing its options against any lawsuit. DW's Tuzo Kumalo in South Africa has been following the story and joins me now on the line from Johannesburg. Tuzo, what do we know about this report?
What we know is that the report alleges that Pravin Gordhan, when he was the SARS commissioner at the time, he set up a unit that was illegal. They called it a rogue unit. This was an intelligence unit that SARS used to survey on those that were not paying tax.
This report accuses Pravin Gordhan, who was head of the Revenue Services and later the country's finance minister, of having knowledge of that particular rogue unit within the tax agency. This was the evidence President Zuma used to fire Pravin Gordhan. Now, KPMG says that the new evidence does not support those findings. Is this going to be a battle between Gordhan and Zuma?
It's definitely going to be a battle. Again, Gordhan and Zuma will be taking each other head on. You remember Gordhan had always insisted that he never presided on an illegal unit. He had said this unit was authentic. It was performing functions of trying to make sure everybody is paying tax. But because of this KPMG report, then it was alleged the unit was illegal. It was operating and using illegal equipment to spy on those people, so to say.
So the report cost $1.7 million. That's what the tax authorities paid KPMG. And now KPMG said they're going to pay back this money. This all is bringing a huge stir. How much is this going to affect the country financially?
This is definitely going to affect the country because besides that KPMG is withdrawing this report, the image of SARS has been dented. Because remember, SARS, it is the treasury that relies on it in terms of collecting finances that form the fiscal of the country. When such an institution has been using reports that cannot be relied on, the image of the country is dented. The image of treasury itself is dented. The Reserve Bank itself is directly linked to SARS. So it's denting the images of those institutions that matter when it comes to the country's economy, whether it grows or it goes down. Especially the rating agencies are watching closely to say how many of such reports have been relied on, either by Treasury, because even Treasury has used the KPMG for a number of things. So a lot of things are not going to be trusted now within the government, within the state, and within our financial institutions because of this single incident. So it's going to hurt the economy very big. Remember, already South Africa has been downgraded by two rating agencies to below investment grade status. And now with this report coming in, affecting also government departments, it's just going to be a mess going forward.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg.
And an issue which has been making headlines, people have been commenting a lot, especially on Twitter where it's trending. I will read one here from Isaac Mogotsi, who says the audit and accounting regulatory bodies of South Africa should immediately withdraw hashtag KPMG license hashtag scandal.
And Zipporah, as you know, we've been asking the same question on our WhatsApp service. We ask whether our listeners would support SARS' decision here to sue KPMG. And we have a response from Kamengele Ngai Dingwe from Johannesburg. He says, I support SARS, but not people who are running this department. The annulation of KPMG's report was a wise decision. It has helped to avoid a political tension, especially these days. I'm afraid we don't have much time to read all of these responses, right?
All right, yeah. Then we'll just move on. Here in Germany, there's less than a week until they head to the elections. And the two main parties, the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats, are the favorites. Chancellor Angela Merkel of the Christian Democrats, or CDU, is seeking a fourth term in office. Her main rival is Martin Schulz of the Social Democrats, or SPD. Merkel has a strong lead in the opinion polls. So how are the two candidates getting themselves apart? Mike Mühlweger has been on the campaign trail to find out.
Some 2,000 people have gathered in the centre of Münster, bracing the rain. Martin Schulz, the Social Democrat rival of Chancellor Merkel, steps onto a stage. His campaign slogan, Time for More Social Justice, is aimed at the growing number of Germans worried about rising inequality, the wealth gap, and who feel excluded from the country's economic success. So why has the early enthusiasm for Schulz fizzled out? Why is his message not resonating with a wider audience?
I ask myself the same question. Maybe there was too much hype in the beginning.
Another reason may be that Schulz has avoided saying which parties he would share power with, because it's clear that neither Schulz nor Merkel will be able to govern without forming a coalition. On the other side of the country, in the northeastern town of Wolgast, Angela Merkel arrives at a campaign event. 150 far-right demonstrators line the street, throwing tomatoes as she drives by. They call her a traitor for letting a million migrants into the country during the refugee crisis of 2015. Inside a hall, speaking to a crowd of 800, Merkel defends the decision that sent her approval rating spiraling.
She's an important factor in securing peace internationally.
She's just talking about the war in Syria. She should be looking after us. She should go into town and see what it looks like. All the shops are closed up.
In this region of former East Germany, unemployment is twice the national average. Many feel Merkel is more concerned with global problems than her own people. The far-right AfD party fueling such sentiments. After beating the Conservatives in a regional election last year, they're now likely to enter the Bundestag.
Mike Mulbiger with that report.
And still on Germany, in an exclusive interview with DW's Ines Paul and Jafar Abdul Karim, the Social Democrats party leader Martin Schulz said he would like to curb human trafficking by setting up a European framework which will give migrants more options of staying in Europe other than the usual seeking for asylum. Take a listen to this clip from the interview, which begins with a question from Ines Paul.
DW is an international broadcaster. Our viewers want to know what a Chancellor Schulz would stand for. For example, when it comes to migration partnerships.
What do you mean?
How do we deal with countries like Niger, Ethiopia, Senegal, Egypt, Libya? What deals or agreements would you make with these countries?
I prefer the term agreement to deal.
There are two issues here. We're seeing a massive wave of refugees leaving Africa and trying to reach Europe. Consequently, people smuggling has become an industry. We need to put a stop to it. For that, we need a migration law for Germany and Europe. Migration to Europe is not a crime. Applying for asylum should not be the only option for people who want to migrate to Europe. We need a migration law like the US, Canada, Australia, like the main immigration countries, so people can apply to immigrate. There's no guarantee it will be approved, but there needs to be an option. European countries need quotas with individual countries saying how many immigrants they can take in. That's a completely pragmatic step we've been talking about for 22 years. I was a member of the European Parliament when we first started discussing it. We need a migration law and a process for people applying to immigrate via embassies and consulates.
That was Germany's Social Democrats Party leader Martin Schulz speaking in an exclusive interview with DW.
And if you'd like to listen and watch the full interview, go to our website dw.com/Germany Decides. And of course, we have some comments on that topic. The first one comes Bangele Guy Dibe from Johannesburg, saying, I think the most important questions are to know what are the reasons that pushed people to take the risk and come seek new way of living abroad.
Lots of responses. Keep them, Africa Link.
Well, if you're just joining us, welcome to DW's Africa Link with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. In the next 15 minutes, why is diabetes now a common killer in Liberia?
Diabetes is very prevalent.
Diabetes is very prevalent in Liberia. Based on what we see here, half of the people in this country is either diabetic or pre-diabetic. This is how severe it is.
But first, we hear about Germany, Nigeria, and Germany has made clear its intentions of investing more in Africa. Early this year, the Development Ministry announced its Marshall Plan with Africa that would prioritize encouraging private investment on the continent, possibly shifting away from the usual official development assistance. And Nigeria is set to tap on this new interest in the continent by encouraging German investors to work in the country. The country now has its first ambassador to Germany after 3 years, Yusuf Tugar. He spoke with our DW colleague, Jane Ayeko. She first wanted to know what's the main focus at the moment regarding the two countries' working relations.
Nigeria's main focus at the moment is foreign direct investment. It's trying to attract more German businesses into Nigeria and then also trying to ameliorate the situation so that Nigerian exports will find a market in Germany.
The embassy has not had an ambassador for over 3 years. Both Nigeria and Germany are looking into this kind of a partnership. My question to you is, how prepared are you to take on such a task?
Very prepared, even though we haven't had a substantive ambassador for a long time. It's better late than never. You know, it comes at an auspicious time when the interest in Africa is quite high on the German side, and likewise on the African side, there's a strong drive towards attracting foreign direct investment. We're doing quite a bit already to, as you put it, clean up the embassy.
Now, keeping at a business perspective, talking about investment that you just put up, we do know that Germany is certainly looking forward to investing in middle enterprises in Africa. And certainly Nigeria is not just a big market in Africa, but also one of their target countries. I'd like to hear from you how prepared you are or what strategies you have set aside to tap into these in fostering both the relations, but also investment.
We're very prepared. We're targeting Mittelstands, for instance. You have roughly about 80,000 burgeoning Mittelstands in Germany, out of which I would say maybe about 150 are world class. Now, it is our intention to try as much as possible to attract them to invest in Nigeria. And then on the Nigerian side, we have prepared amply for that.
German will be hosting a German-Nigeria business forum not so far from now. What does this mean for you as a new face of Nigeria in Germany?
It means a lot for me. It gives me the right platform to discuss the issue of how Germany can help Nigeria work towards mitigating business risk. Because this is one of the concerns that a lot of businesses in Germany have vis-a-vis in investing in Nigeria and Africa as a whole. So if we strengthen the sort of a multilateral or regional agencies that we have that precisely meant to be addressing the issue of financial risk, such as the African Development Bank, Afro-Exim Bank, then, you know, we would do a lot towards encouraging German businesses to invest in Nigeria and Africa at large.
DW's Jane Ayeko talking to the new Nigerian ambassador to Germany, Yusuf Tugar.
And still to come on the show, we have your responses in relation to this story in Kenya, which is the emergency meeting by the electoral body IEBC to decide on the election date for the next elections.
Health check.
Now, diabetes is becoming a common killer in Liberia. The Liberia Diabetes Center has released some scary figures that threaten the country's 4.5 million people. The center disclosed that 3 million Liberians are either diabetics or pre-diabetics. But the World Health Organization says that the sickness is the sixth common killer of Liberians. The major concern, however, is not many Liberians are aware that they are diabetic. Evelyn Pade Segbea reports from Monrovia.
Loretta Manua was 40 years old when she collapsed and almost lost her ability to speak. She was taken to hospital where she was diagnosed as suffering from diabetes. Now aged 58, confined to a chair and unable to walk, Loretta told me how miserable life has become for her.
As a diabetic patient,
it is terrible. I got sick and fell off. But with the help of God, I came through. I was in my 40s when the incident took place. I was rushed to the hospital where I remained for 2 weeks. I almost lost my speech. But when I saw people, I kept on saying, "Hello, hello." This is how I managed to regain my speech. I would lie down in bed throughout and could not even walk. The doctor said it was diabetes. They could not administer a drip on me because the sugar was too much in me.
The restriction on what she's allowed to eat and her immobility has become Loretta's nightmares.
Yeah, the food restriction, that's the main one.
The food restriction is the main thing that hurts me. I started reducing in weight and they started minimizing my diet and all those things. Later, they started giving me buckwheat to eat, and in the morning, they would face a cream crackers in water mixed with milk for me to eat and regain my strength a little.
Your heartbeat is not normal.
Patients at the Liberia Diabetes Center in Monrovia wait to be ushered in for testing. Why others have their test results explained. The center receives between 50 to 100 people for testing each day. I spoke with the center's founder and director, James Momo.
Diabetes is very prevalent.
Diabetes is very prevalent in Liberia. Based on what we see here, half of the people in this country is either diabetic or pre-diabetic. This is how severe it is. There are people running all around here, and they don't know they have diabetes until they walk in here at the diabetes center to get tested, just to get shocked. This is why we need to pay attention to this. In this country, 99% of those tested here are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. People eating habits are very poor. They eat too much carbohydrates and they're not exercising. They keep drinking too much soda and alcohol. When you are addicted to these things, you become vulnerable to contracting diabetes, which is detrimental to your own survival.
In Liberia, people who die suddenly without their family knowing the cause of their death are often said to be victims of witchcraft or African juju. There are no clear symptoms of pre-diabetes. One can have it without knowing. Poor management of diabetes can lead to eye damage, cardiovascular disease, amputation, pregnancy complication, impotency, and heart attack. In Liberia, hospitals and other health facilities have focused more on testing for malaria, typhoid, and infectious diseases, and less testing for diabetes. James Momo recommends more exercise and good eating habits, and he wants the Ministry of Health to incorporate diabetes testing at all health facilities in the country as part of their routine medical testing activities.
Evelyn Pade-Siagbe reporting from Monrovia with that report there on diabetics in Liberia.
Yeah, that's quite a high number of people with diabetes.
It's really scary indeed.
Yeah, in Kenya we call it ugonjwa wa sukari, meaning the sugar disease.
It's not something to laugh about, really. Yeah. You should not be laughing about it.
You're right about that. And moving over to sports, it was a weekend of action here in Germany as the fight for the Bundesliga title intensified. In Africa, focus was the CAF Champions League and the Confederations Cup. But as our DW correspondent Samson O'Malley reports, there's one thing that Bundesliga soccer fans cannot help talking about.
Soccer fans here are all talk about Borussia Dortmund, who now top the German league after beating Cologne 5-0 on Sunday. Borussia Dortmund have gone the first four games of the season without conceding a goal for only the second time since 2001-2002, when they ended up as Bundesliga champions. Former African Footballer of the Year, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, scored brace in that game.
It was fun. It was really good, I think. We play very well. So we scored the second goal before the half time, so it was perfect. Yeah, it was good to play this game.
Rivals Bayern Munich's Robert Lewandowski made history for himself when he recorded his 100th Bundesliga appearance for Bayern Munich. His two goals against Mainz were his 81st and 82nd goals in that time, beating Rudi Völler's record of 73 goals. There was still more at stake for football fans as the Confederation of African Football CAF Champions League matches entered the quarterfinals in various stadia across the continent. South Africa side Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa enhanced their chances of retaining the title after beating Moroccan side Wydad Casablanca by a solitary goal in the first leg quarterfinals. Coach Pitso Mosimane says they have now set their eyes on the top prize.
We've got no excuse, South African teams, not to reach the semi-finals or finals of the Champions League and Confederation Cup. Of course, we want to defend the title.
African teams were also battling for the CAF Confederations Cup. Reigning champions TP Mazembe of DRC edged closer to the semis with a 2-1 win against Al Hilal Obeid in Sudan. While in Rabat, Morocco, Karim Benarif's 19th-minute penalty steered FCUS Rabat to beat Sfaxien for a narrow first-leg advantage. The second-leg matches will take place next weekend. In rugby news, New Zealand's All Blacks recorded a 57-0 win over South Africa's Springboks in a rugby championship test last weekend, dashing South Africa's belief in the revival of its rugby fortunes this season. The Springboks entered the match unbeaten in 6 tests this season, confident it had buried a wretched 2016 season in which it won only 4 of 12 tests. Alistair Kodzi is a South African rugby coach.
No excuses. We walked into a perfect storm. Obviously, we hit the All Blacks and they were really at their best. And, everything they did really turned into points. So our execution was poor on the day.
In basketball, Tunisia claimed their second FIBA AfroBasket title after beating Nigeria 77-65 in the final held in Tunisia over the weekend. Earlier in the day, Senegal claimed the last spot on the podium after seeing off Morocco 73-62 in the third-place game. Nigeria's Ike Diogo was named the tournament's most valuable player.
Samson Omale reporting from Nigeria.
Now, Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, the IEBC, says there is a possibility that the country's presidential election will be moved again from October 17 to either the 26th or the 27th. This is due to the voting technology. Now, the French company that supplied the voting software said the system needs to be reconfigured. It needs a bit more time in order to do so, and the elections will not be set on the dates scheduled for October 17th, which is a rerun. Now, we have lots of your responses,
Nifora. Of course, yes. Yes, we will start off with Vincent, who says Jubilee and Kenyatta are afraid since a reformed IEBC will be to their detriment. Reforms are a must. Hashtag no reforms, no elections.
Daddy Owen says our leaders are playing a very dangerous game with our country. Very dangerous.
Yeah, Anthony, our son from Doula, says before any elections take place in Kenya, the electoral process needs to be plain, free, fair, transparent and acceptable by the parties concerned. This will avoid any unforeseen outcome.
And we have Don Wilson Odhiambo from Kenya. He says it's one of the best ideas and decisions, not only for the country, but also for the citizens of Kenya.
And our listener, who is always listening to us.
Our favorite one.
Yes,
huh?
Isaac Godwin, writing from Monrovia, Liberia, says, even with the postponement and further pushing of the going back for re-election, the process will still continue as High Court has demanded. It was very surprised that Uhuru has taken up the fear syndrome by saying that even if the opposition leader wins, his party will still find a way to impeach him before the 3 months after election.
And from Liberia, let's take you to Malaysia. A comment there from David who says, well, it's a good idea if those involved agree on that idea.
And now to Nigeria. Abdullahi Kaduna says the question now is who is doing the reconfiguration. My take is the French supplier so as to avoid any accusation when the election results are announced.
I just hope this doesn't end up in another lawsuit again.
No, we cannot do another repeat election, then a repeat election. That will take time.
Yeah, more trouble there for Kenyans. Anyways, that's all we had time for. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to having you aboard episode on Africa Link, same time tomorrow. From me, Abubakar Jallo.
And me, Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.